To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com.
Good morning and welcome to CrossLink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host, and we'll be talking today about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm a dental hygienist and I work as a dental hygienist, speaker, and consultant. I also offer a couple of books that I have written for dental hygienists, and we don't talk about my books very often, do we? And you can get those books, the Purple Guide series of books for dental hygienists, at rdhpurpleguide.com. So today I thought I would spend a little bit of time talking about periodontal infections and periodontal disease. It seems to be there's a lot of confusion about periodontal disease, and I'm not sure why that is. We in dental hygiene have been educated, at least I was back in 1986 in my program, and we learned that it is a bacterial infection and that it is the cause of bone loss. So the bacteria get around the teeth, they create what is now called a biofilm. That biofilm produces toxins. Those toxins act on the system. The system acts on those biofilms, or tries to, and part of the action on the biofilm is that it melts away the little fibers that hold the tooth to the bone, and the bone starts to dissolve, and pretty soon the tooth falls out, and there you have it. That was the end of the discussion. What we know today is that the action on the biofilm is system-wide, the chemistry is system-wide, and we are at high risk for a number of things that start with inflammation. So anything that causes inflammation is the problem, and inflammation is the root of all other problems. So it's kind of a weird kind of a catch-22 system. What's happened, though, in dental hygiene is, I don't know if it just happens once we get out and we just try to simplify things, or exactly what is going on, but what has happened is that we look at bone loss as the disease indicator, that if you have bone loss, you have disease, and that's not true. Up until, I don't know, everything seemed to kind of shift gears in 2000, so let's just use that as a standardized marking spot. What we've learned since then is not only do we have this systemic connection, but we also can lose bone for other reasons, particularly bone around the teeth. So we don't have enough offices using new style diagnostics. That's really the short answer there. What we've been doing since probably 1882 or whatever, we've been using a little measuring stick, and that little measuring stick is supposed to let us know where the bone is. And now that has turned into a diagnostic tool, this little measuring stick. And that just doesn't work because it doesn't tell us anything except that the bone is gone. So as a patient, you will be laying in the chair and the hygienist will be doing her readings, and oftentimes she will either use a tape recorder to record the readings and then put them into a paper document later, or she'll use a voice command program that hooks up with the software, which will type it right into the diagram of your teeth. Or she will write it all out by hand, or type it in by hand, or somebody else will be there and do the recording while the dental hygienist is doing the measurements. What's the bastardization part is that right away the dental hygienist will say, oh, this patient has periodontal disease. And that may or may not be the case. That person may have diabetes. Diabetes is a pretty good bone melter, especially for the kind of bone that's around the teeth. So we also know that any kind of malocclusion can also overstimulate the osteoclasts. Those are the cells that break down the bone, and that's how you can get some bone loss. We also can't discern between active infection and past infection. So along with the indicator of bone loss, we use an indicator of bleeding. And I commented on that in a recent episode here on CrossLink Radio. And I hope that you have a chance to listen to that. But the bleeding can be there for a lot of reasons, not just a periodontal infection. If your gloves are too tight, you may press too hard. If it's the end of the day versus the hygienist, if it's the end of the day versus the beginning of the day, the sensitivity is down and the hygienist will often use more pressure on that probe. The amount of pressure that we need to apply onto the probe is very, very low. And it's measured in newtons, which nobody knows what that is, and then it is also converted then to grams of pressure, which nobody knows what it is. So there's no good number, but we do know that the tolerances between the right amount of pressure and too much pressure is minute. So if the hygienist applies too much pressure, the gums will bleed. That's true. Patients have been telling us that forever, but we, in our arrogance, think that we're not applying that much pressure. Believe me, I'm guilty of that myself. You're crazy. These gums are bleeding because they're infected. So we don't have a good diagnostic sequence. So what's been happening on the dental hygienist Facebook groups is that there is almost one discussion a day about how to treat this or that periodontal infection. And most recently, a consultant had come into the office, and the consultant wants the dental hygienist to treat all patients in 40 minutes and also to treat all these 4-millimeter pockets. And it's totally discounting the idea that there's a bacterial infection or not. So we need to be using better diagnostics. Every question that comes up from dental hygienists about the treatment of periodontal disease starts with the inability to decide whether or not there is an actual infection there. There used to be a little machine that won the Inventor's Prize for the year 2000, and it was a little, it looks like a periodontal probe. It was plastic, and it had a little hose that went to the little machine that sat on the counter. And that machine would measure the breakdown in the tissue. So before you could measure the bone loss, before you could measure the tissue, before you could visualize and measure the tissue breakdown, you could use this little gadget to measure the little volatile sulfur compounds. I call them little, but they're really kind of a gas, and they are present when the tissue is breaking down. So this little probe then would go down along the side of your tooth and measure whether or not there were volatile sulfur compounds present. If there were some, then you would initiate treatment, obviously. You were able also to do treatment and then measure those volatile sulfur compounds again, and then do treatment and measure those volatile sulfur compounds again. No one has ever followed up with that science. That little gadget was on the market for maybe 2 years, and the periodontal community, periodontists community, made such a big uproar about how ridiculous it was and blah, 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 and they just totally missed the whole boat on that topic. And that company went under. So the machine now has been passed around to numerous different companies, and they're trying to decide whether or not it can be reconstituted. So that was one way, and that's not a way that we have anymore. But that was a site-specific, real-time measurement of what was happening in the pocket right this second. That didn't fly. We have other things today that are almost as good. One thing is the saliva test. in that saliva test. You use a little bit of saline solution. The patient rinses with the saline solution and spits it into a little vial, and then that vial gets sent to a lab, and then we use DNA testing to decide what bacteria are present, which sounds really, really good, and it is a really good starting place, but a lot of the bacteria that live in the biofilm that are caustic don't necessarily float freely around. So you're not getting a whole measurement of what's happening there. So we don't know that. Another test that we should be, let me back up for just one second. I am a fully proponent of this DNA testing, the saliva test. Every office should be using this directly as one of the first things that we do in our appointments. Because we don't know anything by just measuring the bone height. We know that the bone is gone. That's it. So now the next thing we need to know is whether or not our patients have diabetes. And I think if you have been out in the world, in the United States, for any length of time, you know that this diabetes is almost an epidemic. The food that we've been forced to eat and that has been made available to us in this country has been so focused on fat reduction, and that fat reduction was replaced by sugar. So all of the calories we saved by having the fat has been replaced by empty calories in the sugar that only increase the inflammation in the body. So we have a lot of people who are type 2 diabetics, and they're converting at a very young age, 10 or even younger. So our patients are at super high risk if they live in the United States for diabetes. So just that mere fact alone should really drive home the idea that we in a dental office should be testing for diabetes in our offices. I'm not saying we should make a diagnosis, but we should be doing some kind of blood testing to discern whether or not our patient has, whether or not our patient has diabetes. That's imperative and life-saving. It's a very simple test. Some of the studies show that you can use the blood that comes when you're cleaning someone's teeth. So the bleeding on probing, we can collect that little bit of blood and send it to a lab somewhere and get a reading. There are two main types of reading, and the first is a blood glucose real time right now in the office. That is almost helpful. Then there is the fasting glucose, which is a subset. So we have the regular glucose reading, and then we have the fasting blood glucose reading. But when we do the fasting blood glucose reading, I don't know that we can get our patients to kind of go along with that. So I'm not a big fan of either of those. What I am a big fan of is the A1C test. The A1C test measures the amount of sugars that have been involved with the red blood cells over the last 3 months. So we know that our red blood cells turn over every 3 months. You have an entirely new crop of red blood cells every 3 months. And they react to the sugar, the glucose that's in the body, because they kind of bring it around. And so we can measure the health and the glucose on those red blood cells. And that test is called an HgA1c, hemoglobin A1c, or HbA1c. I don't know why they have two designations, but it's the exact same test. So we can do this test in the office with a little strip, just like a glucose monitor that probably somebody in your family has at this point, and determine that person's A1c number chairside before they leave. Okay, so if we do it at the beginning of the appointment, we can tell them before they leave what their A1C is. Now, if that A1C is high, we would refer them to their physician for further evaluation. So it would be used as a screening tool. This is not out of our realm. It is not practicing medicine. It is definitely within the scope of dental practice and even dental hygiene practice. So once we know that, and we know the kind of bacteria that are living in the mouth, then and only then can we make a determination as to whether or not our patient has periodontal disease. I don't think that it's fair to do anything other than that. While it may look very obvious where the gums are pussy or bleeding easy or, you know, or the pockets are just all mushy and they're like spongy, those patients have a very good chance of having a periodontal infection. I mean, really. But we don't know why. We don't know why that infection is there. And yes, it may get better once we clean it out, just like any infected wound will get better when it's cleaned out. But why is it there? We don't know. We have no way of telling unless we're doing these advanced diagnostics. And patients need to be demanding of those kind of diagnostics. It's expensive to have a periodontal treatment done. It's really expensive. So, for instance, I think their average is almost $200 a quarter of your mouth to have those pockets treated by a dental hygienist. Some hygienists are using lasers, some hygienists are using ozone treatment, and some are using antibiotics that are locally delivered into the pocket, and others are using no adjuncts at all, and they're just getting the hard deposits off the teeth and just crossing their fingers that the tissue is going to respond. But if you have diabetes, we could scrape all day long, and it's never going to get better until your glucose management is better. For some people, you need to have nutrition. 2 weeks ago, or was it last week, we talked to Dr. Schefdor and his product called Pharmadin. It's a nutritional supplement that he's been using for a very long time, and he has been seeing extremely good results. I was talking to another dentist at the speaking consulting meeting in Portland in June, and she said too that she has before and after pictures where she takes where she had her patients only do the nutritional supplement for 10 days, and the improvement was remarkable without any hands-on, you know, scraping or buffing or polishing. We have to treat this as a whole body disease. You know, dental hygienists are kind of, well, and dentists, I guess, are maybe even worse. Floss or die, this whole floss or die thing, that's crazy. It's maybe overstating a little bit, but it's not approaching what it is that we know about periodontal infections and periodontal disease. And we need to be better at that. It's absolutely crazy what we're doing. We would never stand for this in a physician's office. I was just watching that TV show, New York Med, I guess. I was watching it on Hulu. And every single person, they didn't show them asking about insurance or anything, but it was pretty obvious that some of these people were destitute and or at least homeless or extremely poor, and they would say, well, you know, we're going to put you in a CT scanner and we're going to find out what's wrong with you. We're going to find out this. We're going to put you in a... Nobody asked about the money, but they have advanced diagnostics that they need to have in order to treat the patient. We're starting to hear stories now where patients are being turned away. Where was I listening to? Somebody had a finger accident and they went to a hospital and the doctors there said, oh, we're just going to take your fingers off. And they went to two other hospitals before they found a hospital that was like, well, of course we're just going to sew them back on. You know, and it was everything worked out. So it's really hard, and we could be better in dentistry. We have better tools. We have much better tools. So that's what I really wanted to hone in on today for our little time together. I've had a very great time here at the Speaking Consulting Network, and I've met a lot of really awesome people and some really great speakers and some really passionate consultants who are trying to help their offices get to the next level of health and incorporate some of this oral systemic stuff. And that's great, but if all you do is use the oral systemic science to tell patients to floss more and to you know, just tell them that you're going to do what you do so that they're going to be healthier because it's going to affect the rest of their body, we have to remember it works in the opposite way too. We have to reduce the inflammation that's happening. We need to decide or measure the amount of inflammation in the body, which I guess is another blood test that I neglected to mention a minute ago when we were talking about that. We can also measure the amount of inflammation in the body. And that inflammation is measured by a blood test called C-reactive protein. Now, in dentistry, it's pretty helpful because we are looking at the mouth. We are seeing clinical signs that there's an inflammation happening. And this blood test will at least tell us, yes, there's an inflammation happening there. And what we also can find out is that our treatments have made a difference in that inflammatory number. So that is really critical as well. We'll be talking with Dr. Schefter, who started a company that does blood testing in the dental offices, but it's taking too long to catch on. I've been talking about this since the year 2000, that we should be doing blood tests in the office to check for inflammation. It's now 2015, and still dental offices are really hesitant, really, really hesitant to do these blood tests in the office. I can't imagine treating patients without it. We're missing so much diagnostic information in dentistry today. Patients, you should not be surprised when you're asked to have a blood test. You should ask to have a blood test. You should go to your physician and say, my dentist says that I have periodontal disease and I would like to have these two blood tests before I go for the treatment. You know, if you can't get results at your physician, at your dental office, maybe you can get it at your physician's office. I think I mentioned a couple of times that I now see a naturopath, and she has a phlebotomist that comes to the office, one day or 2 days a week, and I can just drop in there, and I can just leave some blood, and they can just ship it off to a lab, and there we go. You know, so maybe that would be a better option. I'm a pretty big fan of having a different type of healthcare doctor to help you with figuring out what it is that is going on with you. And dentistry is no different. One researcher, who was it? Oh my gosh, it flew out of my head just now. Mentioned that, that cavities are the first sign of diabetes. My son, who has never had a cavity before, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is the what we used to call juvenile diabetes, and he has been having cavities ever since then, and he's very adamant that he's never had a cavity until he was diagnosed with diabetes. And we just finished, 8 or 10 little Pitt and Fisher kind of fillings using ozone treatment for him. So it's really, really complicated, and everything has a reason to work together, and we have to address all the parts. We can't just address the part of the biofilm growing on your teeth. Why is it growing on your teeth? It's a natural occurrence, okay. But if your saliva sucks, if your saliva doesn't work, it's never going to be less. You can brush and floss and brush and floss, but you're going to always have a lot more of that biofilm than other people. And if you find a change in that, that could be that there's a change in your health and that needs to be addressed as well. And I don't know that we do that in dentistry. The days when I am chairside and I find a patient with multiple areas, a patient of record with multiple areas of decay, it just seems to be a matter of course, and the doctor just says, well, we need to have these five or six fillings done, and this is how we're going to do it, and boom, there we go. Teach them how to floss better. And that's not an answer. You should be incensed if they tell you to floss better, you're over 35, and you've not had a filling, or it's been a long time since you've had a filling. That is a sign of disease. And I'm not overstating that. You can find dentists that'll back me up on that. But this is a super high time for getting on with it already. Find out what is in your food. Find out how much sugar is in your food. Are you eating too much grain? Are you not eating enough meat? All of those kind of things will contribute to an imbalance in the system as a whole. And once that shows up in your teeth, holy moly. Holy moly, that's all I can say. So thanks for joining me again today on CrossLink Radio. I hope you found this episode worth sharing with your friends on Facebook or other social media outlets. And take a look at my guided mastermind video that I have on my YouTube channel to see if this would work for you if you're a clinician, to help you practice at a higher level so that when your patients hear an episode like this of about their oral health, that when they come to you and say, why is this happening, you don't just say, because you don't floss more. That's not an answer. It's a shortcut, and it's harming our patients, and I don't think anybody wants to harm our patients. So have a good rest of the day, and take a share, and we'll talk to you next time on CrossLink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski signing off.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, Shirley@CrossLinkRadio.com.